Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sam Legasek.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Oddcast, Movies, Music, and Games. And here with me, as always, is a Dreadful Dan G. Hello, Dreadful Dan.
Bar weep, grana weep, ninny bong.
Bar weep, grana weep, ninny bong.
Hooray!
What a lovely, lovely little reference to today's oddity, which is Transformers the movie, but not the Michael Bay. No, we're talking about the true Transformers movie.
The good stuff.
The 1986 animated movie, simply titled Transformers the movie.
Well, I'm going to pull you up on that. I believe it's The Transformers the movie.
The Transformers the movie.
It's all important, that extra article.
Yes.
I love how clunky and cumbersome it is. The Transformers, the movie.
Exactly. They're the Transformers, which, to be fair, is a, you know, there were a few knockoffs kind of going on. So, Dan, before we get right into this movie, which I have to say, I have always loved this film.
Yeah.
And I've always loved the Transformers. Well, the originals anyway, the Gen 1, let's say.
Okay.
What's your history with Transformers?
I think I enjoyed the Transformers, but I'll be honest, I was always more of a GoBots kind of guy. Mm. Remember the GoBots?
Yeah, I was going to say, I do remember GoBots, but they were basically the kind of inspired by, let's say, Transformers.
They were a spin-off.
The same thing. Yeah.
They were a spin-off. Transformers were a bit too mainstream for me, a bit too obvious. I was like 1986 hipster. hipster four-year-old.
Robots in disguise. not obvious robots. That's not what they're called.
It's a paradox. I do remember for some reason I really liked GoBots. I think because I had the GoBots versus Rock Lords movie on VHS. So I've still got all my GoBots and Rock Lord action figures somewhere. But I only ever had a couple of Transformers. I did recognize a few in this film and I was like, oh, I had that. But I didn't have many. And I can barely remember actually like what happened in any episodes or anything. This film, I don't remember actually watching it as a kid. I've seen it a couple of times. I think I saw it like when I was a teenager. And again, another time. So yeah, but I rewatched it last night and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And there's actually stuff I appreciated about it, I think, more than the last few times I'd seen it. There's just so much to like, I think, in the storytelling here. But looking forward to getting into that with you. What about you? Good. What's your transforming background?
Yeah, I always loved Transformers. I think, for me, it was all like when they started, and to be fair, the movie's kind of the catalyst for this. When they started doing more like weird offshoots, so you got the Dinobots who appear, for instance, they started going down that route. I vaguely remember being a little bit like over stimulated or something. I don't really understand what's going on anymore. But the original Transformers, and as you said, like with the cartoon series, I have vague recollections of the cartoon series, but always remember there was an element of it was pretty much the same thing each and every episode. There's always a general thing, which is the cubes, the energy cubes. Do you remember them? And I always remember they looked like jelly. They looked like the jelly cubes. And I always remember thinking that as a kid, just being like, they're like jelly cubes. And they're just like, but there's like loads of them. And that's their like energy. That's their fuel or whatever, which they do. If you remember in the movie, they do talk about that at the beginning. Like I can't remember what they're called, but they're after like the energy cubes, basically.
Okay.
We need to scale. That's the whole thing that kind of starts the whole thing. We need to scale this. We need to assault the Decepticons, but we need more energy. Can you go back to Earth and get some?
Yes.
That's when it all starts kicking off. So those are those cube things.
I'm picturing you as a child with just like raw jelly smeared all over your face. I'm eating the energy cubes.
But they weren't just pure jelly cubes, just pure sugar. I don't know if that was like an English thing, the fact that they were in those like kind of cubes. I don't know if the American or wherever else had that as well. It felt very English, like jelly generally. I don't know.
Something satisfying about slicing it up with a pair of scissors.
Yeah. And also, as you say, that jelly in England is different. So like jelly in America is jam.
Yeah. We're talking about jello, gelatin.
Yeah, we're talking about jello. Yeah, like the stuff. You put it in a bowl, whatever. You put in some water, it melts it. You wait for it to set. You got yourself some jelly. Anyway, so weird thing, but yeah, each episode was kind of the same and it was vaguely like we've got to protect Earth and here's some like Earth things around, and it was obviously the kid and the dad, Spike and whatever, and it was just mainly them just having these fights on Earth with the Decepticons. But I always remember loving the characters. Prime, always, forever.
Yeah, iconic.
Yeah, he was just brilliant, like the ultimate kind of leader, like strong, like really amazing. And then I remember, I really loved, Starscream.
Oh, really?
That guy. Yeah. Who was voiced by a comedian, what was his name again? I've probably got it down somewhere. Was it Casey Kasem? I think that was him.
Okay.
He was a comedian. Yeah. He had this like great voice who apparently like whenever he was doing his vocal takes, he was just like 100 and he was spitting everywhere, like he was really like going for it.
He's great.
Of the other cast,
he's really slimy, and that really comes across in that voice.
Yeah, he's really good. But I remember really loving him. Soundwave, if you remember, like with the cassette tapes, which was, you know, as a kid that was technology, like when we were growing up, like cassettes and all this stuff, like CDs hadn't, by that point CDs hadn't made like an impression at all yet. It was all cassettes and everything was cassettes.
That must have been such an amazing toy to have a Soundwave figure.
Mm.
Like with the cassettes and things.
Yeah, well, we had them. You and me had them because you could get the little cassette things and they were just slowly, they were tiny and they used to like unfold. I can always remember actually physically doing it. Maybe someone else.
Really?
I don't remember. I don't remember having it myself. I vaguely remember, yeah, I mean, they would have. Of course, they would have. Everything got made into a toy. But
I was thinking about poor old Soundwave as well. Like, what's his role in the Autobots in 2021? It's like...
Well, he's a Decepticon. Yeah.
What?
Soundwave is a Decepticon.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, 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 right. I can just imagine him standing around in the corner being like... Soundwave. They'd be like, we're getting a transmission. He'd be like... Yeah, should we play it on tape? And they were like, not really, Soundwave. And he's like, oh, are you sure you don't want to listen to anything on cassette? It's just like, it's got that nostalgic quality. And like, yeah, let's probably just push this button and play it through the normal means.
I have 500 megabytes of internal memory now. What? 500 megabytes? Was that an album? Yeah, so I always remember loving Soundwave. I loved Megatron, fucking loved Megatron. Like the way he looked, like his kind of grey, weird, like mullet thing. But yeah, just everything about it, I really enjoyed. Enjoyed like the fact it was all like speedy and there were like fucking huge robots and all this stuff. And I was obsessed with that anyway. So I remember that. And I had like a Hot Rod toy as well. And I remember that was one of my favourite toys was the Hot Rod. Hot Rod car toy kind of thing. And yeah, he obviously plays a part in this one. So
big part.
Yeah. So Transformers, I think for me, like it wasn't He-Man I loved. Thundercats was probably my favorite out of all the kind of stuff that was going on back then. But Transformers is in like the top five probably as a kid. So with this film... I had it on VHS when it came out. So I've still got that somewhere.
Have you? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, we'll have it at my mum's, yeah. And I watched it often, I would say. And then when I went to uni, it got a re-release, I want to say, on DVD.
Yeah.
And the album got released, and we'll come on to the album later. I don't think it came out at the same time. It might have been a couple of years later. And I was so excited because it was now like, you know, high definition, you know, DVD quality now of the film. So that was really great. And then now, recently, I got it on Blu-ray. And then the one that I watched in preparation for this was a 4K Blu-ray. So, you know, literally the most perfect pristine one you could have, but it's strange because it's actually got two different versions in it. So it's weird because the 4K one has two different versions. It's got a like widescreen theatrical version, and it's also got a like a square version, basically. Where apparently, and I don't know if this is true or not. I didn't look into it properly enough, but they because it bombed at the box office, but it took off on video, and then they realized that that's where most people are going to watch it, is on their TV.
Yeah.
They went through and basically like added like extra animation to the top and bottom. I think they called it like, maybe they matted it or something like that. I think it's a term for it, to kind of make it fit for like a, what would be obviously back in the day, a square TV. So there's two different versions. I only watched the widescreen one because I was like, it's widescreen, it's the theatrical version. But some, you know, some people watch it the other way. To be honest, I should have probably watched it. I shouldn't have just watched the same version twice, which is what I actually did. should have tried.
It'd be funny if it's really crap though, if it's just like black and white drawing at the top of the screen.
Yeah, exactly. And it's great actually watching it in 4K because it feels, I don't know, it's good and it's bad. It's good because obviously the quality of it and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I've missed that like retro fuzz, like that VHS fuzz that's kind
of,
you get across with it. That's, it's like when something's like really bright, which happens a lot in this film, it's not quite as crisp. It kind of gives it a more of like a shimmer, like dreamlike kind of thing when it does like those bright flashes.
Yeah.
And they use that a lot in this film. And apparently what that is it basically to do that, they like overexpose the, animation basically like 4 or 5 times. So it's not, obviously it's not a light flashing or whatever. They're just like layering this overexposed,
interesting
cell, I suppose, or like frame, to make it appear as if it's flashing, and all this stuff. It's just quite interesting, isn't it?
How they, well, I've never heard of that being done before.
Yeah, it's the hand. That's the thing. It's like, that's watching this back, I was like, the hand drawn nature of it is great. It's beautiful. There's a few moments where it's like, it looks a bit like ropey, which you can imagine. But for the most part, like 90% of it, like probably more, like 99% of it is just great. Just everything about it is brilliant. And it does.
And so, just
for the context, so I watched it once with my kids who loved it. They thought it was great. And I watched it with the commentary on. So I can kind of divulge a little bit. And I've done a little bit of research as well, extra research. So we can kind of, you know, discuss it as we go through.
Cool. So, I watched the DVD, by the way. I'd love to have seen that 4K because I love all that detail of like, especially when Unicron's arriving on the scene and like crunching up planets. You just see there's so much going on the screen. I think that would be really impressive.
Yeah, super crisp. And also like it's just like a brighter colour. Like, you know, when he's doing like the 3D scans and all this of when he's changing them. Like all that stuff just looks really like, you know, proper basically.
That's some of the most exciting stuff visually. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right, well, let's get into it then. I think like I was thinking about how we do this and I was like, let's just go through the film because it's like chronologically and just jump instead of just jumping around, because it's quite a simple story, but a lot happens and
a bloody lot happens.
Yeah.
I mean that's what I was saying earlier when I was I was impressed with the storytelling.
Mm.
Better than I remembered. Mm. And like you're saying, as a small mind, actually, it's quite confusing in a way, because I guess if you've been watching the TV series and like you say, it's quite episodic and there's a standard kind of like format for each episode. Suddenly we're out in space.
Mm.
We've got all these new characters being introduced and then going off, getting split up from each other, different little groups, different kind of planets, different villains they're introduced to, little mini quests that they all have to go on, and it all comes back together. Mm. And you've got, big, what feel like epic events occurring very early in the film, and new threats being established. And just that spread of different characters and subplots and locations makes it feel like a huge epic kind of piece of storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, there's something almost Greek about it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Before we get into it, because, it is relentless, completely relentless.
Yeah.
Like, it's constant action. Stuff is happening. Stakes are raised, like, constantly throughout the whole thing. It never, even at the down points, it's only down for, like, 5 seconds, and then something else is kicking off. And it's funny you say about the Greek thing, because one of the story writers who did the commentary basically was saying how like this was at a time when it was the 80s, right? So like Joseph Campbell's the Hero's Journey and all this stuff was like at its prime. Like, this is how you should write a story, and that's basically what happens with Hot Rod here. But what's also great is that all the characters are already like fleshed out, and you know who they are, and it's like, oh God, it's just so great. Anyway, let's take a break and then we're going to get into it. So Yeah, I guess like with this film, it was the reason why it was made, to be honest, was that they wanted the Hasbro / Marvel Entertainment, whatever, wanted to get rid of the Gen 1 toys and introduce new toys. That was the purpose of this film. So they went in being like, we have to kill off Prime, spoiler, we have to kill off all these people because we need brand new toys coming in.
Yeah.
And this film is going to do that. So that's kind of why what existed. And it's funny because the people that made this, which Sunbow Productions, they're basically like the, how to put this, they're like the advertising arm of Hasbro or something. So
okay,
literally this movie is an advert.
Yeah.
And they're not shy about that. They were obviously, everyone involved wanted to make it the best thing it could be and still worked hard on it. But it's an advert. That's what it is. It was there just to sell new toys, getting new characters. We need the Dinobots, they're new. We need XYZ. We've got to throw this all in. Like RC, and all this, like the first female Transformer. Like, we need to throw it all in because we need to sell more toys. So, and what I loved about that is that they've already started with, we can kill people. Like, we're not, you know, we have to kill these people off.
Nothing sacred.
Exactly, at all, whatsoever. So that was quite interesting. And literally, so the first fucking thing that you see coming from out of space, deep space or whatever, is our main villain, our big villain, I should say, literally, Unicron. Now, Dan, Unicron, give me, what watching this back as an adult, yeah. What did you like / hate about it, him?
Breathtaking. I loved it. I loved that first appearance because it feels like the Death Star.
Yes.
You know, and obviously, people watching this, children in 1986, a lot of them probably seen Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So it carries with it, I think, all of that kind of like ominous dread already. You just see this thing kind of creak into your vision. Yeah, I really liked it. I liked like the colors of it. It just looked really, really cool. And it made me just think like, you know, Galactus, hello.
Yeah.
Take a back seat. Here's the real destroyer of planets.
Yeah. So like that sweeping shot, I think like it's also, it's cool for the animation because it's got the shot where he like comes past the camera and there's like about 2 seconds or something where you see the intricate detail of the ship of him basically, as he goes by. And I always remember thinking, you know, fuck, that looks great. And then, before we kind of get into that, he was voiced, this was the last appearance by Orson Welles.
What a way to go out.
And yeah, people, that's what I mean. Well, so, right, about that, a lot of people are like, oh, can you believe his last film was Transformers the movie? And I'm like, could you believe his last film was Transformers the movie?
I'll be honest, I was in that camp probably 10 years ago. And now I've been converted to like, yeah, what a great way to go out.
Yeah.
He has a lot of fun with it and he does a great job.
Yeah. Well, apparently like when he was kind of come in to do the voice record, everyone was just like freaking out and someone had sent round one of like his tapes that he'd done for an advert and he was freaking out or something like that. He'd had some kind of tantrum. And he was like, bear in mind, like he was huge, but he was literally the size of Unicron by this point. he was massive. And so he came in and the voice director guy, I forget his name, which is really awful because he was one of the, one of the main people involved, well, with all the Transformers stuff. But it was just them two, basically. And he talked him through it and the character. And apparently Orson Welles, like completely nice guy, really like not this like tyrant that everyone was kind of expecting. And he apparently like really did care about this performance. He wanted to do it well. And I think that comes across because it's like such a great, you know, you need that kind of like dramatic Shakespearean type voice. Yes. Like I think these days it's like you have like what's his name? Jean-Luc Picard guy. his is obviously isn't quite as deep, but it's that kind of real thespian, like
yes.
you take it as drama, like it's really yes. serious.
Adds a lot of gravitas.
Exactly, yeah, literally. And yeah, and then apparently 2 weeks later, he died. Like, so it was literally not that quick.
Really?
Yeah. It was literally a matter of days after he did the voice recording that he actually popped it. Wow. And I'm a big Orson Welles fan. Yeah. In any case, I think the man is just an enigma, like, of our age. And yeah, so he comes in, and this is like, bear in mind, this is a kid's film, and the opening shot is like you've got this nice happy planet with like shopping malls and these like kids running around, and you know just by the look of these guys, like it's not Cybertron, like these aren't our normal Transformers. This is like some other planet. It just looks different and all this. And what I love, and this happens a lot, is there's like you've got like robots with like mustaches and like beards, or whatever. It's like, are they metal? And you've got like little kids running around. It's like, well, are they made as children? Like, how do they like grow up?
I noticed that as well. I thought that was quite interesting how they give them all a very specific sort of like design look to create this, you know, idea that there are different sort of like ethnicities mm-hmm. or like nations. I mean, they're separate planets, aren't they? But I did look and I thought they do look a bit sort of like 1980s stereotypical Oriental.
Yeah.
With those like Fu Manchu type kind of mustache.
Well, it's the same as we get onto the garbage guys later. They have the same kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, so it's quite straight, but I mean, like, whatever. So it's just a bit characters, but it's quite funny. And literally, like, it's all nice and happy, and they seem to be like a very progressive, kind of, like, it's all like science and all this stuff, and everything's like clean and nice and happy. Then Unicron fucking turns up and literally just slowly, well, it's not slowly, it's quite fast to be honest, but like munches down on this planet. And what I like is that they set it up with, you see like one of the doctors with the trays of stuff, and then all of a sudden it's like he goes like, Galbicus, it's Unicron or something, and then they try and get in their ship. And this is what I always love when they do, like, especially when it's like big disaster movies and stuff, is you focus on like, even if you don't know them, you don't have to be introduced to them, but just focus on like one small part of it. And you can play with that. So you've got this like one guy trying to escape basically from this. And I love how that world is just like kind of crumbling and then being pulled back into his mouth. And it's like a monster kind of like, it reminds me of the mouth in like that X-Files host episode or something, where it's just like drawing it in, and it's got those kind of like spider like little teeth things, like just pulling it into its mouth.
Exactly. It feels very animalistic, even though it's a robot. And it's really slowly just being almost like dissolved, even though, you know, it's being eaten. And then it's cool because you see some of, again, the inside like machinery, don't you?
That's right.
And that there's a whole system in here. And that level of detail really kind of like brings it all to life.
Mm. Well, those bits as well, like, looking back at that, it looks very like arty. Like, it reminded me a little bit of, like, Fantastic Planet that we talked about the other day as well.
Yeah.
Like, those kind of colours, it's all a bit weird. Like, you don't really know what's going on. But I think the director, Nelson Shin, was saying how he wanted it to feel very, like, biological. Even though it's a machine, it needed to feel, like, disgusting and, like, an actual biological entity, like a, you know, a human body kind of thing, which it definitely does give off. You hear, like, those...
Yeah.
It's not like a machine, like ksh, 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 ksh. It's like literally like eating.
They managed that, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that really came over.
Yeah, it's really horrible and like visceral. And like this way, like it's like everything goes dark as soon as he comes in. And apparently, like, so a little bit more about Unicron. He was based on Saturn, apparently, and he was going to be called like the Entity or something like that, was his original name. But Saturn is like a play, I believe, like comes from, well, basically the devil, like Satan or Satap or whatever it is. And so the idea of being that it's like a devil planet, which makes sense, right? Like coming along to Kuvan. And apparently what was originally going to happen is it was going to be like this electric mist that would slowly go over the world. And as it touches people, they like dissolve. So it's funny that you're saying that, like as if it's like acid. Blah. And then Unicron, like his circle thing would just appear out of this mist and basically like suck it all up.
That would have been really cool. I like that idea. I mean, I like what we got.
Yeah, I like what we got as well. But that would have been a great alternative take. And then as you see him eating it, all like the lights and his thing lights up, and you realize it's making it very apparent that it's like he is eating it for energy. Like,
yes.
He's like, he's full of life now. He's ready to go.
Raring to go.
Yeah. So it's quite this like hardcore, violent, like traumatic, like opening to this, like, to this film. Like, you've just seen these kids dancing around, these families, these most normal people. And they've literally just within the mere seconds just been completely obliterated and eaten.
It's absolutely brutal. I mean, it's a dark film.
Yeah, it is dark. It's very dark. And then this is the bit, and then just that, this bit I love. It just has this like, it's now like a wide shot of him where he's just like now floating through the sky. It's all lit up. And he kind of just pulls to the side of you there. And I'm just like, yeah, here we go. Here we go. And it's the Transformers song. And then you go through like the, what is it, like the O in movie or something like that. Like you go into like the Transformers sign. And it's all this kind of like 2001 style, like kaleidoscopic, like thing of colors.
It's very exciting. Yeah. That tonal shift from like you're sitting there with your mouth agape at this wanton destruction, but that beat kicks in and you're like, okay, here we go. Exactly. It's such a great like contrast in tone.
Yeah, and it's also just like it's that kind of like, okay, Transformers are going to come and like defeat this guy. We now know, like, we know what the evil is that they're going to have to try and defeat. So, so a quick one about the music. So next week we're going to do the Transformers movie album soundtrack, which will be interesting. But I have, like, we both know that I like the 80s cheese as much as the next person. But specifically with this soundtrack, every song is that pure, like, uplifting 80s stadium cheese hair metal. Doesn't take itself seriously, but has that whole, like, it's all about, getting, facing adversity and, like, getting through and, like, you know, giving, you know, you got the touch, you got the power and all this stuff. It's all really, like, yeah, you know, you can do it. It's all like motivational almost and all this stuff. What people might not, because it's funny because I haven't heard the original Transformers theme tune for ages, because obviously the only thing I watch now really is this movie. But it was very like mechanical and robotic. It's just like a thing. So having like a real, like watching this as a kid, I'm trying to kind of emphasize this, the difference. You've got this massive, like, you're watching a Transformers movie, you've just had this massive epic thing just happen, and then you've got a band, an actual real life band with a singer, like doing a rock version of the theme tune that you've heard like 1,000 times before, and you're just like, this is everything that I've loved. It's just been turned up to 11, and it's only been like 2 minutes in.
I mean, you're totally right. It's my, like, those first few minutes, they just pack so much in, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
The only thing that takes it down a notch for me, which you wouldn't have as a kid, but I did think it was interesting, the first name we then see on screen as that song kicks in, Eric Idle.
Yeah. Yeah. There's plenty of some kind of thing where he wanted to get top billing or something. Like, it's weird because he's. Eric Idle comes towards the end. He plays one of the like garbage guys.
Wreck-Gar.
Yeah, which you come on to. But I guess like the real famous person, there's two real famous people, right? It's kind of Judd Nelson, who is really big at this time, Breakfast Club, etc., whatever.
Right.
And Leonard Nimoy, who's obviously Star Trek, who doesn't come, again, doesn't really come in until like a third of the way into the movie.
Yeah.
And it's weird because Hot Rod is our hero, but it's like we don't know that he's our hero until like the end. Like, it's just fucking, I just love it so much. So
he's got such a great arc.
He is great. Yeah. So Cybertron, we're on Cybertron then. Prime's like, we need some more energy. Go get some energy. And meanwhile, Decepticons are spying on them. They come back. Megatron's like, okay, cool, let's go fuck them up. What I love about like this whole thing, and they say this in the commentary, is that basically gravity just doesn't matter. Like, it's just out the window. There's no realism here. There's that. There's scale. Scale was completely fucked all the time. And apparently there was like an official scale chart from Sunbow or whatever, but that just gets tossed out like all the time. Like, and things like the fact that Megatron can turn into like a handgun, like all that metal just seems to get condensed into a handgun. And the massive thing, which is always the issue, which everyone always brings up, which is Optimus Prime's truck. Where does it come from? Where does it go?
Tim, here's the truck.
Exactly. If it's just like, don't worry about it. So there's loads of this stuff. I always find that quite funny.
I can imagine the people who get hung up on all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Exactly. And it's like, it's kind of Earth physics. Like, you know, when they throw Megatron out of the thing later on and he just kind of like falls down. It's like, well, he's in space. Like he's not falling. But it's like, just don't worry about it. Just don't worry. The reason why I say it is because obviously they attack the ship and then they like fly in, and they start killing the Autobots. And then this is where, like, so when I was listening, the director's basically going like, Decepticons are purple and the Transformers, the Autobots, sorry, are orange. And we need to distinguish that. And it's like, yeah, it's pretty obvious. Like, you don't have to point this out. Obviously Decepticons is purple. Like that's their whole thing.
They've always been purple, haven't they?
Yeah, but like they're like fire. So you can kind of distinguish who's who, whatever. It's like Star Wars or whatever. And then, but what I love about this whole scene is that when they attack, there's that bit where the guy's like, no, you can't. And he's like grabbing onto Megatron's foot. And Megatron's just like, screw you, kid. And just like kills him. And I remember again, being a kid, just being like, like, okay, like this is serious.
That's pretty shocking, that moment.
Yeah.
Just, he's so ruthless. You're just not used to that kind of level. It reminded me of bloody like a scene from Platoon or something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, especially with that guy, I think it's that same guy, like when he gets like hit and you just see the smoke like rise from his eyes and they just kind of go dead and he falls back. And this is what I love as well, is that as they're doing the fighting, it feels like, it's not fast. Like it feels heavy and slow and like powerful, which, okay, it's not like as if it's like Matrix kind of kung fu, super fast stuff, but it feels like these are heavy, powerful hits and fights kind of going on and whatever.
Yeah. Tangible brutality
to it. Yeah. Yeah.
I wondered if any of these characters were significant at all, if they were featured in the series. Because already you were starting to see people kind of getting snuffed out.
Those Autobots were.
Wow.
I think, because isn't like Jazz one of them? I can't remember whether that's someone else. I think Jazz, it might be, oh God, some people, real fans out there are going to be slaughtering me, but Scatman Crothers, if I'm saying his name right, also was, I think this was also his last film. And if you don't know who he is the guy in The Shining. He's the black guy who comes to save the kid and gets killed by an axe as soon as he arrives, which I always loved about The Shining. So this was like, he did, I think it was, I don't know, he did one of the Autobots. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, I believe these characters were in, you know, the TV series, but I could be mistaken. So then we cut to Earth and it's Daniel, the kid, who's us, basically, like the human children, and Hot Rod. And you kind of hear, you start getting a sense of the scale. He's really small. Hot Rod's really big. Hot Rod, obviously, being like, this is him as a kid. Like, he's a kid at the moment. There's a reason why he's sitting with Daniel. And that's because they're essentially like, they're trying to subconsciously make the connection that he's also a child, even though he's massive. Like, he's fishing. Like, he's childish, like a big brother kind of type.
Yeah.
He's hanging with children, put it that way. And then
Don't put it that way.
Yeah, with his hot rod. And then they, so then he races back and you can see he's got his fucking cool car and all this stuff, which is, I love his car. It's just so 80s and everything.
His colours are good as well, aren't they? Like pink and yellow and orange.
Orange, yeah, exactly.
It makes me think of a fruit salad, sweetie.
Yeah, yes, it does. Yeah, it's exactly that. And then straight off, like, he like looks up and he's like, it's Decepticons. They start shooting. So you've just had, you're straight into like another battle. And then this is like the big Earth battle. So it just, now we're into like what would in any other film probably be the climax of the whole movie.
Yeah, and we're like, what, 10 minutes
in? 10 minutes in. And it's like, yeah, we're already straight in there. And so this is really cool, this bit, because this is where they introduce a lot of the new characters, like the, I think it's the Devastator. Who's the guy, who's the Decepticon that's made up of all the little Decepticons. Love that character.
Yeah.
That's the first time we'd really seen anything like that in Transformers world, I believe.
What about the old dude?
So the old dude, I can't remember his, I think it's, is it Lionel Stander? And he's like an old school Hollywood actor. You'd probably have noticed him from like playing an old man in stuff. But yeah, Kip, I think his name, isn't it? And Yeah, and that's good as well because he's like trying to build stuff and Hot Rod is stumbling through like some, you know, idiot teenager and he's like, oh, you kids kind of thing, like irresponsible children. So there's these little like drops which feel like, you know, inconsequential, but are actually little character beats that are setting up. And also like they've immediately done that old versus young because later on, obviously they get together, well, maybe, but they become friends. So here you've got that young versus old dynamic between Kip and Hot Rod, and obviously you're kind of setting all these little bits up, and it's like, what, like half a second as he crashes through.
But this was one of my favorite things about the film, I think, was the like relationship between those two characters, how it grows then throughout the film. And you know, he starts off as like the boring, kind of slightly grumpy old veteran who's seen it all and is like admonishing Hot Rod, being, you know, fiery and a bit reckless. And they, yeah, they like grow and have mutual respect. And they have a good little bit of like rapport, I think, as the film goes along.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they've got a really good relationship. Yeah, it's a very good point. And, so yeah, and yeah, again, this battle ensues, and then it's all going to pot a little bit. The Decepticons are doing really well. Looks like they're going to win. And then this is where you see like RC. You see, oh God, what was Robert Stack's character? Ultra Magnus. And right. Obviously, you're starting to see some of the people you're already familiar with when you watch the TV show and all this stuff. So you're like, okay, yeah, cool. And then the same with Decepticons as well. You start seeing all you've kind of seen them already, but now you're seeing them fight. This is your usual Transformers fair. And then you're just like, oh man, it's all like going a bit tits up, especially when Devastator gets involved. And there's one really great line, which is like, what does he say? I've got better things to do tonight than die. Or something like that.
There's so many great one-liners in this film. Yeah. It's so quotable. And yeah, that's one of them.
That's one of them. And then like, yeah, at this point where they're like, oh man, we're getting massacred. Prime jumps in and saves the day. And you've got this really cool, like classic slow-mo shot of Prime transforming. And then it's just the way he like comes in and he does it and he does that jump. He's kind of flying over and he's like shooting people as he's doing it, spinning out. And then you've got like the ultimate showdown, him and Megatron. And this is like, again, this is supposed to be like the climax and this is happening so super early.
It's so reassuring when he turns up as well.
Yeah.
He's just such a, he's that perfect like embodiment of 1980s, like kind of like American spirit, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's also like a father figure to the Autobots and in turn like us. So it's like you feel like that security when he turns up because, you know, and this obviously plays in for what happens in a minute.
But before we get to that, because that's such a huge pivotal moment,
we've
missed the arrival and debut of the Dinobots.
Yes, the Dinobots as well. So you got
that's one of my favorite bits.
Yeah, they. So I was. I'm always a bit. They're the kind of comic relief basically, for the film.
They are.
Which is fine. But yeah, I didn't really... Like, the thing is, with, like, cars and vehicles and stuff like that, I kind of get it. I always thought, why are you turning into dinosaurs? Yeah. And why do Transformers know what dinosaurs, like, look like? I don't know, like, that whole thing just felt a bit weird to me. But,
it raises so many questions. But again, we shouldn't think about them too hard.
No.
They're robot dinosaurs. It's just cool.
But they're pretty much always in their dino form. Like, they're very rarely... And this is in the TV series as well. They very rarely swap out to like their human form. They're pretty much dinosaurs like the whole time.
Yeah, when they transformed, I was like, wow, forgot they could do that.
Yeah.
But I've got a massive soft spot for Grimlock, and he might be my favourite character in the whole
Grimlock.
Film.
Grimlock? Yeah.
Me, Grimlock? Character.
Fucking hell.
What's he say? He's like, he's the other one who's got lots of good one-liners.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I can't remember one, but yeah.
So he's like, me Grimlock, me no bozo, me king.
Oh yeah, something like that, yeah. But the other ones, they all have that same kind of like stupid, dim-witted voices. But yeah, but they're like powerful and stuff, so, you know, they help out. You've got this showdown between Prime and Megatron, and it's all like this kind of back and forth, like, why would you throw away your life so carelessly? That's something you should ask yourself. Whatever, like they've kind of got this thing going on. And then they have this really cool fight where like they both are like getting injured. And then I love this bit. It's such a classic like Shakespearean kind of thing, because you've got like, he's about to shoot Megatron and finish it, whatever. Hot Rod realizes the Megatron's going for a gun. But by getting in the way, like Prime gets shot basically by Megatron. Quite a few times. This is kind of part of Hot Rod's thing, is that even though he doesn't really say this, he does, the idea is that he feels kind of responsible for it because he kind of got involved. And the whole thing is him trying to like, you know, the way he works with like Kip and all this stuff, who is that kind of mentor figure again, and all this stuff is kind of, you know, making up for the fact that he feels responsible for Prime's death, which does happen. But before he does that, like he, like Megatron, like comes to like gloat basically. And then Prime does this like two-handed, like it was not a bitch slap, but two-handed, like,
it's like a haymaker.
Haymaker, that's it.
Double axe handle haymaker.
Yeah. And Megatron just falls on the floor and he's basically dead as well. So they both like knocks each other out. And there's that little bit where like, he like Prime tries to stand up and he falls back down. I just remember thinking, because you expect him to get up and they give you that little bit of hope. And then when he falls back down, you're like, oh fuck, it's really serious.
Unbelievable. There's a lovely little bit of contrast here as well. When, you know, they're trying to help him up. And, but Megatron, I think Starscream just comes over and like kicks him.
Yeah, he does kick him. This is great. Starscream is like one of the best characters. He's so duplicitous and evil and shitty.
Machiavellian.
Yeah. And that's it. He's just so sycophantic to Megatron when he needs to be. He's just so quick to stab him in the back. It's funny. And he's a bit of comic relief as well, to be fair.
But at this point, we're 25 minutes into the movie and you've done the big battle
that
you would assume would finish the movie, and here it is, and it's done. And now both guys are about to be written out.
Yeah, exactly. Both your key hero and villain going. And this is it. So they get, you've got this scene now where, so the Decepticons run off. They're like, oh, Prime did it. He saved us, blah, blah, blah. And then you've got the scene where they're in like a robot hospital, I guess. And yeah, Prime's in a bad way. And the music is all like super like serious, like a hospital drama kind of thing.
It's also pseudo-religious, I think.
Yeah. So like Prime is this kind of Jesus figure.
Yeah. Do not grieve. Soon I shall be one with the Matrix.
Yeah. Matrix. The way he says it. Yeah. And yeah, so the Matrix is, I believe it's something that we hadn't heard of before this film, but it's like a secret weapon. It's a bit weird. It's like this thing that Prime keeps in him that apparently every Autobot seems to have a space for within their makeup. I don't know. And the idea is it's like this weapon, I guess, like this kind of source of power, but also, like, as you said, this pseudo-religious, like, Nirvana type place or something like that. It's
basically the Force.
Yeah, a little bit. Not to get too hung up about it. And he's like, oh, you know, the chosen one or whatever will light it in our darkest hour, all this stuff. Which apparently was literally just Winston Churchill. Ripped off him. And yeah, so, and this is what I love. So when he like drops it, you'll notice Hot Rod picks it up. Hot Rod catches it. And there's that moment where he's like looking at it being all powerful. And then he gives it to Ultra Magnus.
Yeah. Next in line.
Yeah. Who it slips out. As he tries to like put it in, which I thought was a great little like touch to be like, he's not completely comfortable like with this.
And he says, doesn't he, Ultra Magnus is like, I don't have it in me to be a great leader.
Yeah.
I think Optimus Prime kind of says, don't worry, because someone will come along. He doesn't say, don't worry. I think you are the man for the job. Don't worry. Eventually, an Autobot will rise from the ranks. Lead the way.
Thanks for the vote of confidence. Yeah, exactly. And it's always weird because I remember, like, up to this point, Ultra Magnus was very much like very strong. Like, he's massive as well compared to all the others. He's he looks like Prime as well. And he very much felt like the second in command. So, where it's a bit like when you're watching this as a kid, you're not really thinking of Hot Rod, to be honest. You are thinking it's going to be Ultra Magnus because he's like, you know, it was always like the massive fucking built like military leader that was the way that Prime had that kind of human like leadership aspect. Ultra Magnus was like the firm, authoritative like type. So
it's great red herring.
Yeah, it is. And it's really weird, like, talking about this in the context of being a kid at that time and what you're kind of expecting and how you deal with it. But, yeah, so they get it, and then this is a big thing. Prime dies. He turns grey, his head tilts, and he's gone. He's dead.
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I saw it.
Well, apparently this caused quite the controversy because a lot of kids were left crying. I mean, there was one kid who, like, didn't leave his room for 2 weeks or something. Just couldn't get over the fact that Optimus Prime died. It was a bit of a traumatizing experience, maybe, for a lot of children that just were not expecting this, like, whatsoever. Their hero's dead. But bold move. And to be fair, I love the way it's like, it's one that they were like, they were told to do. It's not like they were like, for the purpose of the story, we're going to kill Prime. They were told, like, you have to kill Optimus Prime. So,
but it does work. That's what's great. They've made it work within the context of the story. They turned that horrible, commercial, cynical decision into a great piece of drama.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. But what a bold move. Yeah. It's genuinely shocking. Yeah. Can you imagine if you went to see a Masters of the Universe movie and they used it to kill off He-Man?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
Or Lion-O in a Thundercats film.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
Certainly, like, he was Transformers. So, at this point, what I love is we cut the Decepticons and they're just basically doing fisticuffs who's going to be there next week.
It is cool how they contrast a lot of, throughout the film. They'll go like, this is how the Autobots do it, and this is how the Decepticons do it.
Exactly. So
like, Autobots is all noble. There's this like chain of commands, passing of the torch, and they're just like scrabbling over, literally on the floor.
Exactly. They're throwing Megatron out the fucking side, even though he's still alive. Brilliant. Just literally chucked him off. Like, don't give a fuck.
That's great when he's like, please, I've still got some life force in me.
Function. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just like, see you later.
Yeah. Love that. So they kind of go off and then, they fight amongst each other, whatever, and they fuck off.
And Starscream basically decides he's going to be the leader at that point.
Yeah.
And they seem to go along with that.
Yeah, it seems to be all right. Now, I think, is this where Unicron makes another entrance?
Yeah, so this is where you see Megatron and some of the others drifting in space, and they basically drift into the path of Unicron. Mm. You think, well, he's just eating them all. But no, he speaks to him, and he's very much like, he's like a god. Mm. Introduces himself to Megatron, and basically says, I summoned you here. Mm. I think Megatron's like, no one summons Megatron.
Yeah. Well, I'll be pleased to say that I'm the first. Or something like that.
Yeah. Very good.
And I love this. And this whole sequence. Sorry, go on, yeah.
It just starts off, and again, this is like another relationship that plays out then through the film, is this uneasy one, this kind of pact between Megatron and Unicron, because he gives him his life essentially by rebirthing him as a new character. But at the same time, Megatron, or Galvatron as he becomes, is like in his thrall the whole time. And he's constantly plotting to get out of it and defeat Unicron himself. So it's great. You've got these different like allegiances being set up and these like layers, which, as the film plays out, that becomes, just ratchets that drama up again. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and what I really love about this bit as well, this whole sequence to me is horrific on another level, because this is like he's making a deal with the devil. Because it's very like, it's dark, like he's, and I remember watching this, the fact that he's this tiny little thing, and he's just talking to this massive, apparently they wanted it to be like a speaker, so you know, you get that like force of air as he's talking, they wanted it to be like, you know, like a speaker booming or something like that, which I thought was quite interesting. He's this tiny thing, so it felt really epic. It's very quiet as well, it felt like, so you've got that kind of, just that general like fear of space, you know, like the vast emptiness of nothing and the beyond and death, which is basically what's happened. The way like it flashes red and white and all this stuff, just visually it's like weird. And the fact that now you've seen like the ultimate bad guy and he's nothing, he's literally like he's like huge bad guy.
You see a bit more of him here as well. You know, you're saying about all that kind of like presentation of Unicron as like organic. Mm. You see like inside, and there's all this kind of like, it reminds me of like Mobius kind of stuff. And it's kind of almost psychedelic.
Yeah, it is quite psychedelic. And then you've got this cool bit where he basically changes him and some other people who got thrown out. I just remembered that bit with which we've just gone past, where it's like, we need to lose some of the weight. Who's supposed to be throughout or injured? Those say I. Those say nay. Nay. Yeah. Forgot about that bit. But all those guys basically get turned into the new bad guys, which is Galvatron and his gang, essentially. And they look a lot, they're like purple. Well, they're always purple, but it's in, they like look a lot more modern and swish. And these are the new lines of toys, basically, they wanted to bring in. Galvatron is now Leonard Nimoy. He's come in, he's got a new voice and everything. And but he's like controlled, as you said, as much as he tries to get out of it, like Unicron's just like, I can hear everything that you are saying and that you're trying to do.
Pack it in.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh God, this Galvatron guy needs to get over it.
What do you think about this animation sequence?
That's great.
The actual transformation.
I love it. When he does that like scan of Megatron and you see all those little bits, that purple light, and then even when they've got those kind of rings and they do it like on a more basic level for the other ones, and they change them. I don't know why. It's just fucking insane. I love it. I just love the way it looks. It's pure, like, you know, 80s synthwave kind of like music video kind of stuff.
They get reduced to, like, I suppose, like a schematic kind of drawing.
Yeah.
Just then, like, animated. And what do you think? What's your preference? Are you a Galvatron man or a Megatron man?
So, Megatron for me, but I do appreciate that Galvatron is, like, the cooler looking one. But I think Megatron is just, like, that old school, like, lump of, like, heavy metal kind of, like, bad guy. And he just looks, I just love his look. Whereas Galvatron, I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. It's like, for me, it's not quite as interesting, but it is cooler. But
he's got this kind of, like, three-pronged, it's almost like a crown. Yeah. So you can, I think I prefer Megatron as well.
Mm. Yeah, Megatron is just, like, more iconic looking, really.
But Leonard Nimoy is cool.
Yeah.
And he doesn't sound like Spock.
No, he does a really good job here, 'cause he sounds like angry and evil. And all this stuff, which is mad.
It's not the man who brought us the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Bilbo.
I still enjoy that song. I still listen to, like, Shatner's stuff every now and then, which is a bit weird, but yeah.
Great stuff. We'll have to do an episode on
We do, don't we?
Their musical careers.
That's the next one. That's what we have to do. So then he goes, I can't remember what the next scene is, but I don't know if it's still sticking with Galvatron when he basically comes in and
he crashes the coronation.
Yeah, like, there's this huge, like, ceremony for Starscream with this crown that is, but all this stuff doesn't exist. He's just, or maybe it did, I don't know, but it's just made it up basically to, like, make this big thing of him being the leader.
Yeah.
Galvatron just fucking turns up and kills Starscream. Like, just turns him to dust. And again, as a kid, you're just like, what? It's dead. Fuck. And they're basically like, yeah, so you're going to follow me now. So let's go destroy everyone again. And then if I'm right, they go back. They go back to Earth, right, to try and basically destroy the rest of the rest of the people that are still trying to clear up Earth base. So they're now going back to reattack it, I guess. And get
it's after
the Matrix.
Moon base one.
It's after the Matrix, isn't he? That's what he's doing.
Oh yeah, we forgot to mention that. That's the important.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite key.
Yeah, his mission now, Galvatron. Unicron has basically salvaged Megatron and turned him into Galvatron because he wants him to go and get the Matrix.
Yeah.
Because he says the Matrix is the only thing that can now sort of stand in his way of utter power.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, he's actually destroying the moons of Cybertron.
It's not Cybertron. Moon base two.
And that's where Daniel's dad is
Spike.
So you've got, again, this sequence of, like, oh, they're going to get away, and then they get sucked back in. You're just like, Spike, like, that Daniel's dad is just like, what, so he's dead now? And obviously, like, you presume at that point they're all dead, like, he's just dead. So you think this kid's dad's dead,
and you really think it could happen after you've seen all these other high profile deaths.
Yeah, you're ready for it.
It's like, they're going to kill an actual human.
Yeah, it's Halle, mad. Mush him up. They attack again. And I think this is where they get in the space shuttle and they escape. And then they are chased by Galvatron. He's got his cool new ships and all this stuff, which they've obviously got into show off. And then they jettison part of the ship. And they crash on the garbage planet. And then that's when they're like, we're going to rebuild. We got to rebuild some of our ship. And then Galvatron's like, yeah, cool. They're all dead. And then Unicron's like, they're not dead, you idiot. You got to go kill them. They're on the garbage planet or whatever. It's like, oh, fuck's sake. So then they go. And then this is where they like split up now, don't they?
They get split up. And this is, I love this. This is where splintering, and we start getting these individual little subplots as they all have to kind of, like, battle different enemies.
And And yeah, and then at the same time, this is where we see Ultra Magnus try and use the Matrix, and he just, he's having a hard time. Yeah. He can't do it. But you're really like watching it going, okay, here we go. Here we go. Oh, he's fumbling and oh, okay, he's dead. Yeah. Cool. And then Galvatron's like, the Matrix, yeah, now I can use this to destroy Unicron. I mean, no, I don't want to destroy Unicron. Yeah, I'll bring it back, whatever.
This is quite cool though, because you're quite conflicted watching this, because you're like, well, didn't really like Galvatron, didn't really want to kill Ultra Magnus, but at the same time, he seems to have a better chance with the Matrix of killing Unicron. Mm. So I like that. It's like multifaceted shades here going on.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always a good idea for a big film, isn't it? Like, just like you say, it ups the stakes when you introduce like a greater enemy that these like people have to kind of like come together sometimes to band against.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And this is where, like, on this planet, you see what they called the junk. Oh God, what are they called? Junkians? Is that right? I think so. The Junkians, the guy on this junk planet.
Sounds good to me.
And they like start popping up, and you're like, "Who are these guys?" So now you kind of got this going on. Meanwhile, Hot Rod and Kip. Is it Kip or Cup?
Cup, I think.
Cup. Okay.
The old dude.
Yeah, the old dude. They're like,
and they've got stuck with the Dinobots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is great. But they're like, they've crashed onto this planet, and they're like underwater for a start. You've got this cool underwater sequence. Hot Rod manages to like escape these, well, finds some piranhas or whatever, and he finds this like robot squid that's basically pulled Cup apart, and then he saves him, puts all his bits back together, and at that time, right. Cup's like sitting there, he's like got no leg, got no arm, and you're like, oh fuck, like he's fucked. But no, like Hot Rod fixes him, and it's like, oh, you did a really good job, laddie, like, yeah. And you think, oh, okay, like, and there's a so it's that little hint that he's like a bit special or something, I don't know, like a little bit, like the fact that Cup's really impressed. And obviously, as you said, the relationship has deepened a bit now because Hot Rod's gone out of his way to save him and all this. And but they get captured. Let's go through this little sequence because I suppose it doesn't really make a difference.
This is fun. This is where the robots come, and this is where he tries the old universal greeting.
That's right.
Bar weep grana weep ninny bomb.
Yeah, with these little like energy candies or something.
Yeah, they're like, say this and then give them a little treat. And they're like, we're kind of out of treats. This is getting expensive.
Yeah.
And then basically they're like, we're all out. And these things just like transform into these horrible
fish
creatures
things.
And just like jump on them.
Yeah.
And basically they're incarcerated. Mm. And this is one of my favorite parts of the film. And this is one of the most, for me, most memorable because it was the absolutely like most sinister bit of the film.
Yeah.
They're taken to this like tribunal. Mm. And you meet in the jail cell, they meet the last survivor of that planet that we saw getting destroyed
right.
in the very opening.
At the beginning, yeah.
And it's so tragic. They really play this up, don't they? Because he's like, no, I'm the last of my kind. Yeah. And they just like chuck him in this like pit and he's just like destroyed by these like shark transformers.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them as well. But that whole thing, like where they've got the four, it's like the tribunal or whatever, like these four like faces on one unit that just kind of shift. I remember finding that really scary as a kid. And then you've got this like kind of octopusy, like this kind of weird sea creature thing with tentacles.
Tentacled thing. Yeah. But it looks really evil and scary.
Yeah. And what I love is that if they've made it look like this, whatever this is, it's a fucking like Lynchian situation. Like it's weird. Like it's just weird. And there's obviously like a history and they do this for some sadistic pleasure because the idea is like, guilty or innocent. And God knows what happens when you're guilty, but innocent means you basically die. It's kind of like drowning of the witches or whatever. So it's interesting because they've built out like another weird world that is pretty horrific. It's like a horror film. It's like that kind of thing when you watch a horror film and it's like, whatever, it's some kids and they stumble on something that's been there like forever. And there's a history that's there that you feel like they've wandered into and they're now become a part of. But it doesn't feel like it's something that's created for that. It feels like lived in. And this is kind of what it feels like here. And that's what I really loved about it, because I was just like, this is genuinely terrifying and I've no idea what's going on. And that's what makes it even more scary.
It's great that they don't try and give you too much. They don't beat you around the head with it. They just present, like you say, something and you like, you know, there's more to it. And it's a bit bewildering. And but that whole thing around innocent.
Yeah.
God, that's so horrible.
It is. It's horrible. They just look like skulls or something. But then it kind of
gets a bit...
Imperial
Magister.
Yeah, is that what it is? Then it gets a bit funny because then you've got... they basically are like, okay, let's just... They say, like, they literally call it Destruction Derby, which I thought was quite funny. But, like, they basically create a whirlpool by going so fast. And they're able to kind of destroy these shark things and...
Sharktacons.
Yeah, and at the same time, what's happened is the Dinobots have been walking around and they found this little guy called Wheelie, who is the most nothing character ever. Just a little piece of, like, poo that's been scratched out of someone's bum and just put onto... put into this film.
He's the most shoehorned in element of this film, I think.
Yeah, just whatever. And he's got his fucking like shit slingshot or whatever. So it's just another toy, I guess. And he's like led the Dinobots in. So they like come and they also save the day. So it's all kicking off now.
I love this.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a big Dinobot fan. I love Grimlock. Yeah. That moment for me, that was almost as heroic as Optimus Prime arriving when they just like kick down the wall and it just like splatters the Sharktacons.
Yeah.
They're just like, bum, 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 it's bumbling along.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 we've saved the day.
Because you've kind of got that thing of like ultimate despair of like, they're tied up. They're about to get into this fucking pool of sharks. Like there's nothing they can do, apparently. No one thought of transforming apparently before that. But and the added icing on the cake is the fact that Dinobots, and then you're like, okay, it's all weird, like it's all fine now. And they basically start
a nice little moment here.
Huh? Start a revolution. They're like to the shark.
Yeah, that's a nice little moment. They're just like, we basically cleaned up this planet. It's like, hey, go and get him instead.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, yes, that's a good idea.
Yes.
Rather than this huge robotic T-Rex.
Yeah. What's that? They're like, why are you listening to him? to that guy.
They could do a whole movie about this planet, the backstory and everything.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Exactly. So now they're like, let's go to that ship, which looks like a corkscrew, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Huh?
And so that's kind of the end of that little like B story, I guess. So now they're trying to put, so they kind of battle the... Junkians, or they're kind of having this like to and fro, and which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we don't know if they're bad or good, basically.
Yeah, we're just like, what's going on? But
what do you think about the Junkians?
So this is where Eric Idle comes in, and basically the idea is that they speak like TV language, like everything's like as if they've heard it off the radio. It's all like sped up. And all this, not to the amount of Buzz, who was voiced by that guy that talks really fast, but like quite close. But yeah, this is Eric Idle, and he's just making up like slogans and all this stuff, which I thought was quite a nice commentary about pop culture and throwaway, you know, mass media kind of stuff, whatever, which is quite nice. But yeah, I thought they were all right. And then you've got the Weird Al Yankovic Devo spin-off, Parody, that's it. Dare to Be Stupid, which is great. Another great song. And
I like this moment because this is when Hot Rod and the Dinobots and that crew arrive.
Mm.
And it's all been a bit fraught at that point. There's still friction.
Yeah.
And they try the universal gesture again.
Yeah.
Hot Rod does it this time.
Hot Rod's learned.
Note.
Exactly, yeah.
And it works. And suddenly it's like that ridiculous song kicks in, which I love.
Yeah,
Dare to Be Stupid.
Yeah.
And you get this little animated scene. It reminds me of like the Ewoks or something.
Yeah, it is.
Where they're literally all holding hands and doing like a ring around the roses, dancing around. And it's just like a big party. I thought it was really good fun, that.
Yeah, sorry. It's a bit silly, isn't it? It's quite funny.
Yeah.
And it's also, it reminded me of, you might remember this. I can't remember the name of the film, but it was very young Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix, where they go up into a spaceship and they find these aliens, and these aliens all talk like the TV stations, like Earth TV stations. I think it was, Landis film. It's very early, like early 80s. That's what I mean.
I don't know.
Super young Ethan Hawke, super young River Phoenix. It's called something like Flight of the Navigator, but it's not that, obviously. Flight of the Navigator is another film. But
It's not that.
It's not that, but it's that kind of thing.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, look it up. So then at this point, they're like, they want to rebuild Ultra Magnus, right? That's kind of the point. But what happens at this bit now? Galvatron can't, like, goes to, like, try and take on Unicron and use the Matrix, but he can't make it work, basically.
What's happened? Well, the Junkians help rebuild Ultra Magnus, and they basically say, we're going to help you in your quest to battle Unicron. So this is it. It's like all the Autobots are back together. Ultra Magnus is okay. The Junkians are going to support them. So this is like the final third, you know, if we move, there's like three chapters. You've got Galvatron, it's got the Matrix, and he's going to destroy Unicron. And you've got the Autobots, and they're decided they're going to go and destroy Unicron.
Yeah.
And that's like, right, here we go. And you feel like, oh, something big's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's right, because this is when Unicron changes, right? Because Galvatron's like, yeah, I'm going to get, kill you.
I'm going to get you.
Yeah, and Unicron's like, fuck you, guy. And he's got this cool, like, transforming sequence, because it's not just like a... It's like this whole, like, things are spinning in and out, and it's this whole, like, whole thing of where he turns into basically this massive, again, like another, like, Fu Manchu-looking robot.
But he's got wings and horns. He looks like a demon. This is brilliant. Because at this point, the first time I saw it, I just thought it was a big planet.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought it was going to be that sphere the whole time.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
When he starts transforming, it's like, oh my God, he's actually just the biggest robot.
It's like a huge person. And that's it as well, because it's like, there's two things with it. One, I was thinking, I don't know how this is more effective than what he was doing previously, but I think this is more like, we're going to get up close and personal, like, put down the guns, I'm going to use my fists kind of thing, which I get. And secondly, what I love is that even when he's talking, he's kind of got that, I mean, that if you notice, like, the way they're animated, so, like, Optimus Prime has that kind of, like, shield thing over his mouth. You can't see, there's no, like, lips or anything, you can't move. Galvatron... Yeah. He doesn't really show any, he's completely like almost emotionless in his face. Yeah. And I don't know why, but that kind of adds to the, if they made him more, how do I put this? More expressive in his face, I would have found that weirder. But the fact it's like, it's almost as if, even though he's transformed into a person, that's not like, still not the true him. He's just like this like godlike creature. He's just taken the form of a man, but it still feels very... like distant. Does that make sense? It doesn't feel it doesn't feel right. And then he's basically like, well, I'm gonna fuck your home up. So then he starts like smashing Cybertron up, and then basically, as you said, everyone, it's pedal to the metal, metal to the pedal, whatever it is. Pedal to the metal? What is it?
That's the one.
Yes.
Which at this point Cybertron has been taken over by the Decepticons.
Yes. After
what happened, this is the moment where like When the Autobots arrive, Galvatron's able to kind of say, look, we need to band together to beat this guy. Mm. But he's trying to do it. He's trying to do it himself with the Matrix, and he's not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
Because obviously he's not the chosen one.
It's not the chosen one. It's an Autobot thing. Come on.
And he says to Hot Rod, it will do you no good. It can't be opened.
Mm.
Little did he know.
Yeah, well, this is it. So... because everyone like flies into him basically. And this is quite cool because then it's like getting into like, there's all these like weird security systems, and you get to see a bit more of this biological fucking thing that he is inside. At the same time, you've got Daniel, RC, and all this stuff. You've got this little like splinter group. And then you see Spike, Daniel's dad, and it's like they're about to get dropped into this acid pit. I like the idea that these people are like filtered through, like to get to, and this is like the most effective way, like this industry line of like way of doing it, rather than just throwing them all in a massive acid vat anyway.
They're in the belly of the beast.
In the belly of the beast. Daniel,
they're in Unicron.
Yeah, exactly. Daniel is, and he's got his own journey where he's trying to use the suit, he's trying to like grow up a little bit. And he's able to save his dad, basically. He's used the suit, this robo suit, effectively and saved his dad, which was nice. Yeah. And there's a moment where you think the dad's dead again. Yeah. Like, say, he's just been like, oh, he's alive. And now he's dead again. Oh, no, wait, he is alive. And then that's all like sweet. And that kind of ends that bit as well.
Yeah. That's a nice little low key kind of like subplot as well, isn't it? I think, because, you know, like you say, we are Daniel. He has his little moment to shine.
Yeah, and you've got RC, who's kind of like the mother, the maternal figure as well, who's a new character, but who, you know, can still kick ass or whatever and all this stuff, but she's got that motherly, like quite nice, safe feeling, I guess. So,
and some sexy curves.
For a robot, cyborg lady. and so, yeah, so whilst all this is happening, Hot Rod is basically, they kind of forget about him. And it's him versus Galvatron. And yeah, Galvatron, as you said, is a bit like, dude, let's kill this guy. And then Unicron's like, no, you have to kill him or I'm going to kill you. So, okay, fine. Fine, I'll kill Hot Rod. And then they have this cool, like, it reminds me of Return of the Jedi, funny enough, where it's Luke versus Darth in, like, you know, as they're kind of battling in the pit of the Death Star. It's a bit like that rather than Cloud City in Empire.
Definitely.
It's got hints of that. So anyway, they take on, like, and there's just that point where Unicron is winning. Everyone's getting fucked up, basically. Hot Rod's getting choked out, which is weird for a robot, I guess, but fine. And but he's able to kind of get his fingers on the Matrix. And then, yeah, there's this bit where he's using it properly because he puts his fingers in like the slots that are there for a reason. And slowly as he's drawing it open, you've got the, you know, the touch playing in the background. It's just like nice, big, epic, rising song happening as he gets bigger and he turns into Rodimus Prime. literally, that's his name, Rodimus Prime. And
what, really?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
It's Rodimus Prime.
This is the end of the road, Galvatron.
Yeah.
And he blasts him, he like chucks him through Unicron's eye out in space.
That's right, yeah.
Which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. It's great. And then, yeah, he just becomes, yeah, super powerful, saves the day. Galvatron fucking blows up, basically. And I love that it's like his head just fucking comes off, like it decapitated, basically.
But Unicron. Yeah, when he basically he like blows him up from the inside out. Yeah, yeah, and that's when his head comes off. It's such a great shot.
Yeah,
and then you also you return to that, don't you? Right at the end of the film.
Yeah,
that last shot, you just see the head with the shattered eye.
Yeah.
Just like, and it's almost like a repeat of the beginning of the film where you first see Unicron come into view. So this time you're getting in reverse. It's just his defeated, battered head.
Yeah, that's true.
Coming around the side of another planet.
Yeah.
Great.
It's like as a moon now as well, basically. And then Rodimus Prime is addressing the other Autobots, like being like, we did it. We're all of one. Blah, blah, blah. Rally and cry. You know, we've defeated the Decepticons. Everything's great. And Dan, that's the end. We've made it.
Amazing. What a just like exhausting level of excitement. And it all only took like 1 hour and 25 minutes.
Yeah.
But it feels like we've been through so much, Sam.
So much. So much. It's
so many people have died.
Yeah.
New characters introduced, gone on journeys.
Yeah.
Huge, great, big, monumental things happening.
Yeah. If you had to pick And I suppose you'd say the Dinobots, but excluding Grimlock, who would be your standout character for this movie, do you think?
It's got to be Hot Rod. It's his story, really, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, his story is the core story of going from that, you know, chilled out kind of adolescent who's just, like, fishing to stepping up. And throughout, you just see him getting more and more confident, gaining more and more, like, leadership skills.
Mm.
It's like going on a corporate training. and that eventual, like, use of the Matrix. It's great. And then they're all like, oh, we knew it was you, Hot Rod.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, you did.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's talking to me like I'm a fucking idiot. Yeah.
Sycophants.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's the classic choice. I suppose, like, for me, whenever I think about this film, it's just Unicron. Like, he just makes such an imposing figure. And, you know, I just love it. And again, like we've said, it's just constant. Like, it's absolutely constant. It never lets on, never calms down at any point. So, yeah, should we go a little bit into Nerd's Corner now that we've kind of done that?
Yeah, let's go there.
That's it. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Dan, but there were Peter Cullen, who does the voice of Optimus Prime, actually did a couple of other voices, including Ironhide, but the main voice actor is this guy called Frank Welker.
Okay.
Who actually did quite a few voices. He did Megatron. He did, he did Wheelie randomly.
Ha!
If you can believe that. But yeah, I believe he did Soundwave and a few others, Rumble.
Once in a generation talent.
Exactly. And obviously Peter Cullen, who does Prime, did the voice for Prime in all the Michael Bay movies as well. Jazz was Scatman Crothers, and he died as well, obviously, as well as Orson Welles after making this. The other thing is John, I don't know how to say his name, but yeah, Blur, we kind of spoke about this earlier, John Moshita Jr., he was the guy that could talk really fast. He talks like this all the time, blah, blah, blah. If you remember, like, there's that famous clip where he does the whole of Michael Jackson's Bad.
Yeah.
In, like, 10 seconds or something. And that was his whole thing. And people would be like, there's this guy. He was like famous for like 5 minutes in the 80s. And that was his whole thing, was just speaking fast. He was on a few adverts.
Yeah.
He'd come on and do like fucking kids, children's TV shows in the morning or whatever and all this.
Do you know who would have been good to get? The guy from Police Academy.
What,
that does all the noises.
The noises, sorry. That's for who?
Just anything.
Anything. Just
maybe use him instead of Eric Idle.
Yeah, well, again, you said Eric Idle, Monty Python, all that stuff. Weird choice, but you know, you don't have to do much. And the other one is, and it's probably loads of people missing out, but Ultra Magnus was by Robert Stack. I know him for doing the Unsolved Mysteries TV show, which I think I've watched every single one, one of those. But he was like, Robert Stack was like an actor, basically. I think he did a lot of cowboy stuff back in the day. I might be just making that up, but and I believe this was the first voiceover thing that he ever did. And obviously his voice got pretty famous after that. And then, yeah, you've got, as we said, Judd Nelson. That's a little bit there.
Some good nerdy trivia there, Sam.
Yeah, bit of trivia.
Can you tell me, how many Oscars did The Transformers, the movie, win?
10. Can you believe it? More than Lord of the Rings.
Wow. Well, in my opinion, it's far superior.
Yeah, but it is.
So that makes sense.
Got a big fat zero.
Did you say zero?
Absolute zero, yeah.
You're joking.
What a shame. And do you know that the film ended with, I don't know if it did this in the one that I watched actually, but it definitely did this on my VHS with it when, like, oh, stay tuned for more Transformers and the return of Optimus Prime. And I remember thinking, what? Like, oh, he comes back, which is a bit weird. Maybe they added that afterwards. I don't know.
That's so funny because I've got a DVD, but I did originally have this on VHS, and that was the first time I saw it.
Right.
And now that you say that, I remembered that for the first time in like over a decade.
Oh, really? Yeah, and that's why I was waiting for it. I was like, maybe they didn't say it in these versions now.
But I've heard that he was brought back eventually.
Yeah.
I guess to give it a shot in the arm at some point. They were like, oh, maybe we better bring Optimus Prime back.
Yeah, this isn't doing so well. But yeah, I mean, no one could beat Prime. He was fucking Transformers.
Yeah. That's a bit of a shame, really, that they retconned that, but doesn't dampen the shock that you experience when he dies in this film.
Yeah, exactly. I would say let's do reviews, but I think this episode's gone on a fair bit. And to be honest, I think most people love it that are going to comment about it anyway, let's be honest. So, yeah, I think
Let's call it a day, yeah, and make sure that everyone joins us in a week's time because this music is so good. It deserves its own dedicated episode. The Transformers, the movie, the soundtrack.
That's right.
Dare you join us next week?
Oh. Interesting. Now, Dan, are you ready for the touch?
Yeah.
Right. Thanks, guys.
I can confirm that Sam has the power. See you next time.
That's right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram at anewwinter, Twitter at anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.